The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm Todd Wilkerson, and sometimes for fun, I lose a lot of weight and then find a huge, strong raccoon. And I leap on his back, naked, and go for a fun raccoon ride through the woods. You should try it. You get to see the world from a raccoon's perspective. It's not easy losing the weight, but trust me, it's totally worth it. And now, Eric Metaxas.
You know, it's possible that that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Possibly.
It's actually possible. I think it's actually possible.
Okay,
okay folks, you've tuned in. You have no idea what's in store today.
No.
This is a big deal.
It is.
Yesterday, I don't know if you listened to Dana Lash. That was really wonderful. But today, we've got something so special, it's going to be difficult for me to describe it. My guest for both hours today, and actually we kept him into a third hour, so we'll play more with him tomorrow, is Ezra Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T. Ezra Levant. Ezra Levant is Jewish. He's conservative. He lives in Toronto, Canada. He is one of the most brave voices out there today. I cannot tell you. I've known him for a number of years. He came to the latest Socrates in the City event with Peter Thiel. And I, by the way, I hope we get that video up this weekend finally. But Ezra has taken on the case of Tommy Robinson. Some of you know the story of Tommy Robinson in England. It is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Do not miss hours one and two today because you've got to hear what is happening in the UK. It is just, I mean, it's virtually unbelievable, except I know that it's true. So Ezra Levant is telling us about the Tommy Robinson case. It's stunning. I have no words. I cannot even believe it. Wait till you hear it. I hope it makes you mad, and I hope it makes you understand that if you don't speak up when you have the opportunity, shame on you, shame on all of us, because there are people depending on us to speak out against lies, hatred, all of the things that the left seems to use these terms. But the reality is that it's been coming from the left. In the case of Tommy Robinson, it's just obscene, absolutely obscene.
Yeah.
But why should I say more? You'll hear for yourself in a minute. Okay, a couple of announcements. First of all, I want to remind people again, we've just taken on a new sponsor, Honor Bound Coffee.
Yes.
Honor Bound Coffee, this morning, Suzanne and I drank the light roast. We were now trying all three. We've tried the light roast, the medium roast, and the dark roast. I can't decide which one I like best, so
really?
We're stuck. But it has three different roasts. What roast do you guys drink?
We just do the strong.
The dark roast.
In fact, we just reordered and we just got another couple of bags.
Well, I have to tell you, Alvin, it's fantastic coffee. But the most insane part, ladies and gentlemen, they give 100% of their profits to helping military families. It is an amazing. This is gourmet coffee. This is not Folgers or Chock Full of Nuts, which is fine. But I'm telling you, this is gourmet coffee. They give 100% of their profits, 100% to helping military families. So to me, this is the virtual no-brainer. It's just stunning. So you go to honorboundcoffee.com. You can fill it out there. But I really just wonder why anybody wouldn't do this if you can afford it, if you drink, if you really care about coffee, if you're a real coffee connoisseur. This is going to be something I would
try.
I'd be shocked if you don't like it. Honestly,
right.
It's possible, but we've tried it, and we're really fussy about coffee. So I want to say go to honorboundcoffee.com. And while I'm mentioning our new sponsor, honorboundcoffee.com, I should also remind you that anything you order from MyPillow, they are also a major sponsor of this program. But you have to use the code ERIC, or you don't get the big Eric Metaxas Show discount. So whenever people are watching, they see Mike Lindell on TV all the time and some code comes up. Ladies and gentlemen, please blow off that code.
Right.
Put in Eric. You will get our full discount. I don't know who these TV codes are helping, but I'm telling you, if you want to help this program or you want to help yourself, put in Eric because they're a big sponsor of the program. All right. Now,
yes, sir.
Before we get to Ezra Levant.
And I think
Levant.
Levant. It is Levant.
He says Levant.
He says Levant.
What does he know?
I know.
Ezra Levant is Ezra Levant is. I mean, he's just an absolutely spectacular guest. Flew down here to do the program. But before we get to him, I want to share that we're doing a new campaign with Food for the Poor. We've worked for them many, many times. They're a tremendous organization. They help the poorest of the poor around the world. Right now, they're focusing in. They're homing in. Not honing in, homing in, like a homing pigeon going home. They're homing in on the target of Guatemala, which is infamously the place with the highest level of malnutrition in the entire Western Hemisphere. I want you to think about that, folks. In the entire Western Hemisphere, in Central and South America, where there's a lot of poverty, pockets of poverty, the winner of this sad, sad story here is Guatemala. They are infamously the holders of that title, highest level of malnutrition. Obviously, this means kids, families. But the good news is we have such largesse in the West, in our country, in the United States for sure, that we can afford to help them very dramatically. Now, what I mean by that is that the economies of scale are such that they're so poor there that a mere $80 of our money can feed a child for 1 year. Now, Food for the Poor works with people around the world to get, you know, huge shipments and donations of rice and beans and healthy food like that. So they can leverage it so that $80 of yours, imagine how little that is to us, $80 feeds a child for 1 year. And if that's not enough, guarantees them clean drinking water for life. They are drilling wells in Guatemala. A lot of these kids, a lot of these families, they walk for miles oftentimes to bring home dirty water with parasites. This is horrific stuff. But here's the good news. We can do something about it. And so I exhort you, folks, you've all been blessed. We've all been blessed. Even those of us who struggle, we've been blessed compared to folks like this. We can give, as I say, a mere $80 gives food for a year to a kid, water for life, and it literally saves lives. I don't want to forget that when we're talking about malnutrition. Unfortunately, we're talking about life or death situations in many cases. So if you multiply 80 times 4, $320 provides this same blessing, food for an entire year for a family of four. That ends up being $27 a month. I think many of you do this with your kids. If you tell the kids, hey, every month we're going to be giving $27 of our money, why? Because we believe that the Bible tells us we're supposed to help other people. We're supposed to bless those who are struggling. We're called to do that. We're actually commanded to do that. The only question is how. This is how we choose to do it. One of the ways we choose to do it, for $27 a month, we're feeding a family of four. And I think it's a great teaching moment with kids to show them where you put your values. You get nothing back for this. You're just doing this out of the goodness of your hearts. So I just want to say there's a phone number. I'll give you the phone number. But usually the easiest way is to go to our website, metaxastalk.com, metaxastalk.com. At the top, you'll see the banner. But if you'd prefer to call Right now, you can do it before we get to Ezra Levant. The number is 844-863-HOPE. That's 844-863-HOPE. Again, 844-863-HOPE. $320 provides a blessing of food for a whole year for a family of four in Guatemala. When you talk about leverage, our wealth is so tremendous that $320 can feed a family of four for 1 year, plus water for life. Mind-blowing. That's $27 a month. I want to invite you to participate in that. Now, as you know, as usual, when you give, we want to thank you. Alvin and I have worked up a whole system here. We're going to have five grand prizes again, which means visits to the studio. And that's for anything you give. Folks, anything you give, you get entered to win five grand prizes. You get to come to the studio. We're going to send you a ton of signed books and on and on and on and on. And listen, if you don't want these, you can give them away as gifts. You can donate them to a school. Really a tremendous opportunity. We're going to do that. There's other stuff we'll talk about at another time. But I just want to encourage you to give something, to give anything. Before we come back with Ezra Levant, call 844-863-HOPE. That's 844-863-HOPE.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, Ezra Levant is in the studio. Ezra, welcome.
Thank you.
How do we sum you up? I know you're a Canadian. I know you're politically conservative. You and I have had a number of conversations, and the last time we were together was at the Socrates in the City with Peter Thiel, and I said, I've got to get you in the studio to talk about what we were talking about that night. So where should we start? What are the main things you do? You've written many books. You are, you know, a media personality.
Yeah, I mean, Canada is not a very conservative place in the political landscape. It's a left-of-center country. And we don't have a lot of conservative media, but we have a small outlet called rebelnews.com, and we have 1.3 million subscribers on our YouTube channel. So it's not nothing, but compared to America, it's very small. But being in Canada and keeping an eye on the United Kingdom, I feel like we see trends earlier than America, because I've got this phrase I use whenever I visit the United Kingdom and I see what's going on there in terms of mass immigration, the Islamification of society, and the shrinking of freedom of speech. The phrase I use whenever I go there, I come back and I'm bewildered and I think, did I see what I just thought I saw? And I call it my own personal dystopian time machine. When I go to the UK, I see things that I think are going to happen in Canada in 5 years. And I'm here to tell you and your American listeners that they'll happen in America 5 years after that if you're not careful. So while Canada and the UK, probably not top of mind for Americans, I tell you it's a distant early warning system for you.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, it's the canary in the coal mine. If we don't pay attention to what is happening in Europe, and in this case particularly in the UK and in Canada, we're fools, because you're quite right that the trends that we have seen there ever so slowly make their way here. When you talk about the Islamification of these countries, I have had a number of conversations with Baroness Caroline Cox, and she, in the House of Lords, has been heroically talking about these things, and I think they just dismiss her as a nut. I know that she is as solid as it gets, and when she talks about you know, radical Muslims taking over the BBC and taking over big portions of the UK, it sounds crazy, because here in America, we've only begun to see that kind of thing. You're also seeing it in Canada. You and I were talking about the Tommy Robinson case. I don't know if we should start there because there are people that they don't know anything about this. And I said, I want you to help educate my audience.
Tommy Robinson is a terrifying story. I find it riveting, and I have flown over to the UK probably 10 times to observe it, to cover it in person in his trials. I've even visited him in prison. And let me start there. I'm a middle-class Jewish kid from Canada. I am not from the world of working-class Brits. And so when I first heard of a guy named Tommy Robinson, tattoos, prison sentences, you know, it's a little bit outside my safe place. But I saw him on YouTube a lot, standing up against a phenomenon we don't have in North America yet, thank God. It's something that is sometimes called grooming gangs, sometimes called rape gangs. But that doesn't properly describe it. I want to talk about this uncomfortable subject because you have to understand how the censorship and the political cartel has tried to silence this one troublesome Tommy Robinson. You have to understand what a rape gang is. And I'm sorry to be so
We have
graphic.
To face this. I want you to talk. It's one of the reasons I wanted you to come here is because I want my audience to hear about this. I know, unfortunately, this is true, but we're not reading about it in the U.S. media.
If in America someone hears a cry, help, rape, people would call for help or go to help. That's what you do in a high-trust society.
Right.
That treats women as equals and that realizes rape is a crime. Help, help, you would come to help. If in certain other societies, like Pakistan, someone is being raped, help, I'm being raped, men often come to join in the rape. This is a phenomenon that is so frequent, it has its own name. In Egypt, it's called taharush. The swarming, it happened to Laura Logan of CBS when she was right. In Tahrir Square. She was not covered up, and so it turned into a groping riot. These things have come to the United Kingdom, which was once a high-trust society, but they haven't – I mean, in North America, a rape is an isolated act by a rogue criminal, like a smash and grab. In the UK, it's done in teams on an industrial scale, and here's how it works. They target minor children as young as 11, and they entrap them. That's the phrase grooming gang. They'll say, would you like a cigarette? Would you like a beer? Would you like a ride in a fancy car? Would you like a boyfriend? And, okay, now in return, I would like a topless selfie. And then once they have that, well, then it becomes an extortion. Well, now you gave me a topless selfie. I'm going to show that to your mother unless you, I'll just say it, unless you have sex with me. And these girls are often numbed by alcohol and by drugs. And it's not just sex with that one man. It's with him and his colleagues and his friends and his sometimes even his family. And so these girls are extorted and raped sometimes every night.
Let me ask you just for clarity here. I know that this is happening also in Germany. Is this primarily, you know, foreign Muslims who've come to a country and they're specifically targeting European women?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a reason for that?
Yes. According to the Quilliam Foundation, which is a liberal Muslim think tank in the UK, Majid Nawaz is their chief spokesman. 84% of the men convicted of these rape gangs, these grooming gangs, 84% of them are Pakistani Muslim men who make up about 2% of the UK population. It is almost an exclusively Muslim, Pakistani Muslim crime wave. And the victims are almost exclusively white working class British girls, some Sikh girls also. And these girls, I mean...
When you say Sikh, you mean not Muslim, but Sikh, S-I-K-H.
Yeah, Sikh, S-I-K-H.
Okay, so my theory would be, and you can help me, tell me if I'm wrong, but is that these Pakistani men look down upon these other cultures. In other words, they say, if you're not part of our culture, you're fair game.
Well, and this brings us to Tommy Robinson, because I had never heard of this phenomenon until a few years ago. It's so shocking. I've seen reputable studies that suggest up to 100,000 girls in the UK, and I say girls because they're children. Tommy Robinson started to detect. Well, let me first tell you about the one thing I had heard of before I met Tommy. There's a city in the UK called Rotherham. It's about 250,000 people. It's a pretty small city by American or even UK standards. The Times of London, after sitting on the story for 7 years, finally wrote a huge expose about Rotherham. In a city of 250,000 people, 1,400 girls were groomed and raped methodically over and over and over again for a decade. And there were instances of a mother literally pulling her girl, I'm not even going to say, these are children as young as 11, pulling them out of a room, bringing them to the police station and saying, help. And the police saying, you get out of here and you shut your mouth or we'll charge you, mother, with dereliction of being a derelict parent. And when you have 1,400 girls raped repeatedly, this is not once, this is every night, they're extorted, they're threatened. There have been girls or parents threatened with death. There have been murders. These girls are extorted in such shocking ways. Social workers find out about this. Nurses, doctors find out about this. Local politicians find out about this. It's not easy to keep a secret of this scale. After the Times of London wrote this huge expose on this, there was an official inquiry into Rotherham. And again and again and again, people on the front lines all the way up to city councillors said, I was afraid of being called racist if I did something about it. They preferred the rape of an entire generation of girls. 1,400, there's 250,000 people in the city. Half are women, 125,000. How many are above or below the age? Not one home wasn't touched by this, and authorities covered it up for a decade.
This is unspeakable horror. I'm sorry to talk about it, except that the only thing that would be worse would be not to talk about it. We'll be right back with Ezra Levant.
Open for replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Ezra Levant from Canada. Thank you for being in the studio with us in New York. You're sharing some horrific stuff, very hard to process, but I think it's very important that we try. You're telling us about these so-called grooming gangs, rape gangs, consisting primarily of Pakistani men in places like this city in the UK. This is monstrous. You said that the Times of London finally covered this, and you said that for some reason, people who could do something about it prefer not to do something about it because they're afraid of being called racist. This sounds like madness.
Well, I'll tell you how universal this phenomenon is, that being a racist is worse than being a rapist in the UK. It has led to the rape of an entire generation. Rotherham was the first one that received spectacular coverage, but there have been 44 cases like this almost across the entire United Kingdom. And like I said at the outset, rape is so odious to us in the West, in a modern liberal society, in a high-trust society, that no man would cover for it. There are rapes in the West, but they're solitary, secret crimes. In the United Kingdom, they're done in packs by these rape gangs. And so finally, when police would lay charges, they would charge 10, 20, 30 men at a time. But a terrible rule in the United Kingdom is that to preserve the neutrality of a jury hearing a rape gang trial, rather than sequestering the jury, rather than saying to the jury, you can't read newspapers, you can't consult with anyone other than the court, they do the opposite. They say to the whole world, to all the media, you cannot report on anything until the verdict is done. So you have a horrific mass rape involving dozens or hundreds of girls thousands of times. And you have these monsters being cross-examined day after day. And yet it is all kept secret on pain of contempt of court. Some of these trials can go on for years. And then when the verdict is in, and they're almost always found guilty, so you have a burst of coverage for 2 or 3 days. The matter was kept silent for years. And so Tommy Robinson, this fellow I mentioned before, he's a working-class bloke from the town of Luton, which is a poor town. It's a multiracial town. And when Tommy was young, there was one mosque in town. Now there's 35 mosques in town.
35 mosques in his town.
I've driven through Luton.
I've never heard of Luton.
Well, you should see it because, like I say, a dystopian time machine. Luton was, well, there was some of everyone there. And then Islam came and it became Islamified. And Tommy saw this and he was activated. He was just a guy. And he was activated when he saw British troops come home, I think it was from Afghanistan, and they were pelted and insulted by Muslims on the street in Luton. He was shocked by this. And I don't know if you heard of the case of Lee Rigby. That's another British soldier who was decapitated on the street.
Yeah.
And I went to the spot where Lee Rigby was decapitated. There was a tiny brass plaque smaller than your footprint, on the ground of the sidewalk, covered in dust. There was no memorial, no markings. They didn't say how he died or who killed him. Again, because that would, they have a phrase over there, it would be bad for social cohesion. So Tommy, working class bloke, very smart, but not finessed. And so he started speaking out against this. And it's a long story, and we're limited in time. So
he was too dumb to know that speaking the truth is frowned upon.
Well, I don't know if you know the singer Morrissey from the band The Smiths. There's this one line he has, I'll never forget it. He talks about, the song's called Lifeguard Sleeping Girl Drowning. And there's this line, oh, she was nobody's nothing. And you have to understand that these 100,000 girls who have been raped, and maybe it's much more than that, they're nobody's nothing. They're poor working class girls with that thick northern accent. They're uneducated. Maybe they have a criminal record in the family. They're not connected. It's a very classist society there. And Tommy's got his thick Luton accent. If you're fancy, you're fine. But there is a great, these are the Brexit people. These are the people who said no. These are the people who said close the borders.
These are the deplorables of the UK.
And this is part of the reason. So Tommy, and I should tell you that I got to know him a little bit via Skype, and I finally went to meet him, and I hired him to work for my little news company in Canada, even though he's in the UK. I gave him a microphone and a camera, and he started going around the UK and reporting on things like this in his rambunctious way. And he received millions of views, tens of millions of views, because he was talking about things bluntly and frankly. And he makes the distinction between Islam, which is a set of ideas in a book, and Muslims. And that's an important distinction to make. Someone can criticize any ideology without hating a person. And Tommy's very careful about that. But he criticized Islam, the ideology, because you asked me 20 minutes ago, why is it Pakistani Muslim men and why is it white girls? Tommy would argue that there are various verses in the Quran that allow rape slavery.
Muhammad himself said
Muhammad himself practiced rape slavery.
This is an idea my audience is familiar with this because we raised a lot of money to free slaves in the Sudan, and they were and to this moment are enslaved by Muslims who believe that if you're not one of them, they have every right, because of the Quran, to enslave you. And obviously rape goes along with that. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Ezra Levant. Don't go away. If you got a reason, tell me to my face. Why should the devil have all the good news? There's
nothing wrong with what I play. I'm nothing to say. Someone has taken my place. When times go bad, when times go rough, won't you lay me down in the tall grass and let me do my stuff? I'm
Hey there, folks. Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Ezra Levant. He's written many books. He's a journalist. He's an advocate of free speech. And we're talking about some nasty stuff that is happening in the UK right now. You were talking about Tommy Robinson. My friend John Zmirak has referenced Tommy Robinson, and he's aware of the work you do. But it's not something that's been covered very much in the United States.
No. Tommy appeared on Tucker Carlson's show once.
Yeah.
And I think he's been on InfoWars once, and that's about it. And I think that's too bad, because I think that Tommy, not only is he an interesting and excellent communicator, but I think his message is the message that I've tried in my own weak way to communicate. He's an expert on this. A girl in his family was raped. That's one of the reasons he's so engrossed with this. But what happened to him when he started to report this for us at Rebel News was incredible. And let me just finish an answer I half answered before. Not only does the Quran propose rape slavery of women, but many of these convicted rape gang members in the UK say it's a religious act. Say that to the girls as they rape them. Say Allah Akbar when they're convicted. It is an Islamic tactic, and that's why only white girls or Sikh, S-I-K-H, girls in the UK are targeted. So it has a religious overtone, because this is how Muhammad himself practiced his life, and he's the great role model. It's hard to talk about these things. In the end, the Rotherham rape gangs were prosecuted by a Pakistani Muslim prosecutor, and the Quilliam Foundation, Majid Nawaz, sometimes you need to be a Pakistani Muslim man to condemn it, otherwise you'll be called a racist. Isn't that the way? And so if you are white, let alone white working class, let alone bad manners, tattooed, criminal record, Tommy Robinson has his flaws. So it's so easy to dismiss him. But we gave him a microphone and a camera, and he started getting millions of views as he talked about these untalkable things. He left my employ to go independent a couple years ago. And he was, and here's the story that I think should terrify Americans first. The Islamification of society is happening in America, but you're several cycles behind in
right.
terms of immigration.
Right.
But what I believe the threat that will come first is the threat to freedom of speech. It's the strategic freedom upon which all the other freedoms are based.
Right.
And here's what happened. So Tommy was doing a Facebook live stream outside a court where a rape gang, it was judgment day. They had been on trial for months. Girls raped hundreds of times. The most brutal, I won't get into more graphic details because it's a family show. Tommy gets there early with a camera, and we had given him some legal training when he worked with us for the time he did. So he's independent now. He's being careful. He's not recording with his camera on court property. That's one rule. He was not calling these men guilty before they were convicted. That's another rule. He was not blocking them or touching them. He was standing at the court on judgment day as these accused rapists, who in an hour would be all convicted, were coming into court with what's called a prison bag. That's on judgment day. You go straight to the prison. You bring a bag of comfy clothes. Tommy's there, and he asks them this question. I'm saying it verbatim because I know what he said. He said it three times. He said, "How do you feel about your verdict today, mates?" It's a pretty reasonable question. He didn't swear. He didn't block them. He didn't touch them. "How do you feel about your verdict today, mate? How do you feel about your verdict today, mate?" He was getting their faces that they went into the camera. Went into the court. They were going to be convicted that day and sentenced to prison. He's doing this on a live stream. 250,000 people are watching. I was one of them. I'm watching from Canada. He's in the UK. I'm riveted by this. And then a police van pulls up behind him. And seven police take him live on camera and put him in the back of the police wagon. And the last word he says is, "George, call my solicitor." I know George. I'll talk about that in a minute. The doors close within 3 hours. It's judgment day for the rape gang for the offense of saying, "How do you feel about your verdict today, mate?" That's all he said. I saw it with my eyes. You can see it to this day on the internet. He was taken in that police wagon, taken to the police station, brought before the judge in a 10-minute drumhead trial in which Tommy himself did not say a word. He was convicted of contempt of court, and he was immediately sent to Onley Prison. He was sent to a Hull prison and then Onley Prison and put in solitary confinement for 10 weeks. He was put in solitary confinement for his own safety, you see. He lost 40 pounds during that period because the prison chefs were Muslim. The prison was run by Muslims, and they knew that the food was sent to Tommy Robinson, so he couldn't eat the food. He had to eat a tin of – like, this is insane to hear.
What year was this?
This was 2 years ago. I crowdfunded his legal defense. We won the appeal. The Court of Appeal of the UK, unanimous ruling by the Lord Chief Justice himself, sprung him out of prison, tore strips off the court, but then they retried him and reconvicted him. And he was sent to solitary confinement for another 66 days in Belmarsh Prison. That's their version of Guantanamo Bay. I visited him four times in that prison. It's the Guantanamo Bay of London. That's where terrorists are imprisoned.
It's so hard to process this, Ezra. You're telling us things, it seems like, out of a dystopian novel. You're telling us this is happening today in England. And so I've got a million questions. I guess let me start here. First of all, where is Tommy today?
He's out of prison. He served his 66-day term. There's some civil suits against them. The police are suing to ban him from football matches. That's what they call soccer there. He's constantly being harassed by police, but he's also constantly being warned by police. In the UK, they have a notice that if police have actionable intelligence that you are about to be murdered, they must hand deliver you a letter to that effect. They've delivered that letter to Tommy, I think, seven times. So when the cops show up at Tommy's house, he doesn't know if they're there to arrest him or to say, hey, mate, read this. Cheerio. By the way, you're not allowed to defend yourself. Seven times. Oh, and they've had some trials of the, like, there's fatwas out on him. But he's also a hero for people who can't speak for themselves.
I mean, it's so, as I say, difficult to process this because I know you well enough to know you're not speaking hyperbolically. I wish you were, Ezra, but I know you're not. The mainstream media here in the United States doesn't touch this, and it strikes me as lunacy that we are not talking about this. So it's a joy to have you here. Folks, do not go away. Plenty more with Ezra Levant.
Get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling in your bones, put taps on your toes, and get gone, get rhythm. When you get the blues.
Hey there, folks. I am talking to Ezra Levant. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Very serious subject today, but very important. Ezra, before we go farther, why do you suppose, I mean, if a tenth of what you were saying were true, and unfortunately all of it is true, but if a tenth of it were true, you would think that the American news media would be covering this. What accounts for conservative outlets like Fox News not covering this, in your mind?
Tucker Carlson had Tommy Robinson on once when Tommy got out of prison, the solitary confinement where he lost 40 pounds. A terrorist literally delivered a threat to his jail cell. You know, it was incredible. So Tucker had him on once. I think there's two reasons. First of all, there's a lot of background explaining. What's a rape gang? What are you talking about? Like, there's a lot of alien things. The idea that you're not allowed to report on a mass rape trial until it's over. And some of it does look unbelievable. Well, there's also, let me admit, Tommy is a rough and tumble character. He served a jail term for a fight in a street he got into once. He has had a lot of unrelated minor offenses that makes it easier to write him off. It's hard for people from our background to relate to a working class bloke, tattooed, boxer. He's not like us. So, well, they say he's a racist. They say, like, I remember the very first time I talked to Tommy. I mean, I'm Jewish. I said, Tommy, I just want to get this out of the way. They say you're anti-Semitic. That's not true, is it? I mean, I was nervous about, because I'd heard so many things. Oh, he's an Islamophobe. He's a racist. When I first met him in London, he walks in with his best friend since school, a black man. Of course. He grew up in Luton, a mixed race, very mixed race town. His chief allies are Sikhs, S-I-K-H. That's because they're also targeted by these Pakistani male predators. So you have to get through a fog of lies about him. And here's the last thing. In the same week, Tommy Robinson was banned from Facebook, Twitter, PayPal, and a variety of other social media. Tommy had a million followers on Facebook and Twitter, and his page was more engaged than either the Labour Party or the Conservative Party in the UK. He was the largest force in the UK media. So if someone threw a lie at him, he could punch back. They literally held hearings at the British Parliament, and they hauled the head of Google before them, the head of counterterrorism at Google, and they said, why am I getting Tommy Robinson in my suggested videos? They demanded very specifically that Tommy Robinson be censored of YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and indeed, to this day, if you put the word Tommy Robinson on your Facebook post, that post will be deleted and you'll be suspended. The head of Facebook for Scandinavia was asked about this by a local TV station because they wanted to talk about Tommy. They put this on their Facebook page. It was deleted by Facebook. They called him in and said, what are you doing? We want to talk about him. He said, you can only criticize him. We have a list, they said, of people. You can't speak positively about them or neutrally. You can only criticize them. I'd never heard of that before.
This is, I mean, I just, again, the reason I wanted to have you on the program, we're out of time in this segment, but we're going to have plenty more with Ezra Levant. But the reason I want to have you on is because we need to understand what is happening, and we need to understand what we have to do to prevent it from happening in the United States, and also to find out what is going on in Europe. How is it possible for a once great country like England to devolve to this level of, you know, lack of government? There's a kind of chaos. We're done with this time. Ezra, don't go away. We'll continue the conversation. Folks, this is very important. I hope you share these videos and these audios with your friends. We need to get the word out.